Blog Talk Radio.
Of Brazil, I met a young brother that made me feel that the act
could accomplish anything. You see, just like me, he wanted to think he had no windows and no doors. He lived a simple life and was extremely poor. On top of all of that, he had no eyesight. But that didn't keep him from seeing the light. He said, us alike in the USA. And all I did was complain. Living here is paradise. He taught me paradise is in your mind.
Welcome to the African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club with your host and moderator, Charles Williams, and I'm joined by my lovely wife, Jalavette. Say hello, Jalavette.
Hello, Jalavette.
Hey, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing outstanding. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing even better now that I'm on air and with you sharing one of our favorite books.
Yes. Always a pleasure.
Okay, tonight, as we have been for the past 5 weeks, this is us, part six of the of our presentation of Dr. Amos N. Wilson's The Falsification of African Consciousness, subtitled A Eurocentric History, Psychiatry, and the Politics of White Supremacy. And we're in part two of this lecture, titled Eurocentric Political Dogmatism, Its Relationship to the Mental Health Diagnosis of African People. And last week we covered history, psychology, and ideology, and this week we will pick up on coping with contradictions. Okay, now you have a...
Oh, we have Brother Mean on the line.
Hey, what's up, Brother Mean?
What up?
What's up? Yes, we're on page 74 for all the book club members. I'm sure by now many of you have been overwhelmingly convinced that you should go out and get a copy of this transcribed lecture. And the note, everyone, we're not reading the entire book. We're just reading certain portions. And so we're not giving it all away. This is merely a very long infomercial. Information. For the book. Yes. I was kind of, yes. That's what we're doing. And you're going to like it. That's the next part of this. And if you don't like it, you're going to learn to.
Okay.
That's the awkward silence that.
Yes, that is an awkward silence when you've said too much.
That's like, no, I'm not going to make any more jokes.
Oh, just.
I'm going to do that.
Let's get right into the book.
Oh, no. Oh, no, I'm not going to do it. So tempting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to feel it in my own psychology now, will I?
Exactly.
I'm just a jokester. It's just, I can't believe myself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hello, Mrs. Giggles.
You know, this is becoming increasingly uncomfortable. At any juncture that you would like to start reading that book.
Okay, I guess I'll start right about now.
Okay.
All right. Okay. I'm going to start now.
See, now I got to edit all this out.
Okay, here it is. Coping with contradictions. There are a number of means by which we seek to resolve certain contradictions in our lives. We may excuse them by saying that the circumstances which have determined our lives, particularly the failures in our lives, are beyond our control. That is what people who are totally responsible for the situation that we are in, and therefore we have no control over it. I didn't read this before, did I? This sounds...
The only way I would know that is if I was really listening to you before.
Oh, okay.
I'm just kidding. I don't know.
All right. I don't think I did. But anyway, here we go.
I'm just putting everybody on the spot.
No.
A pop quiz. Did I read this last week? This is how
it's done, folks.
Okay.
And attention.
Let's go.
While this is true, it can also lead to some other psychological problems in the individual. And it can also lead to the possibility that the individual becomes apathetic, gives up and resigns from life, gives up trying and begins to believe that he or she is powerless. Unfortunately, the resignation and the apathy of too many of our people are part of the means by which the system maintains itself. The fear of trusting and uniting with each other, the fear of coming together and solving our problems together, the belief that it is just not in us to unite and solve our problems and overcome the dominance of European imperialism itself becomes part of the problem and helps us to maintain the system. Others try to deal with the discrepancy between what the system says they can achieve and our failure to achieve by lowering their personal aspirations by, in a sense, fitting into a lesser place that the society reserves for them. Others try to inflate their achievements, to inflate their possibilities. We see many of us along the highways and byways being very boastful, being very egocentric, bragging a great deal, pumping ourselves up, pumping even the achievements up into giant achievements. We see that even infecting the black nationalist community that buries itself in the great history of Egypt and that the great empires of Africa. Yes, I'm speaking of the kind of historicism that has developed in this community as a means of not confronting reality, of people who live their lives in history and dig among the pyramids of Egypt and dig among the kingdoms of Mali and Songhai, and who build themselves a false pride and pump themselves up about the achievements of our history without facing the perils of current reality and preparing themselves for the future. The black nationalist who makes us feel good and pumps us up and makes us gloat and glow about our great past does not deal with the present and does not educate in terms of coping with the future, and does not adequately prepare us to remove the European from power and to remove these insane people who are about to destroy the earth and life itself, is functioning in the interest of the status quo. And those people who holler about devilishness of the white man, the evilness of the white man, and have it and leave it at that, still are not necessarily performing a full service to our people. There must be other things involved. We see them. Many individuals blowing up the minor accomplishments as a means of ignoring the realities of their situation. Well, if accepting the truth about the situation of African peoples and other people in the world today means exposing the European to himself, of course he is going to ignore that expose. I was on a radio program one night, and a lady told of how her child was left in tears because of a lesson that her white teacher was giving about slave history. What's amazing is that they can teach such history to our people, that the problem was that the child left with a greater sense of frustration and inferiority. The parent was questioning me to a degree as to whether, or at least it was implied, slave history should be taught, since it may upset some of our children. For many white teachers to teach black history in its objective and correct form would be to condemn the very people who are in control of the society itself. It would mean that the teacher, the white teacher who teaches it, will condemn herself or himself. And it also means often, even those of us who are black, when we do not teach our history correctly, we point to our own collusion with the system. This often occurs because what is discussed is the nature of slavery and the conditions of slavery, not the nature and the conditions of the slave master. And the questions that are dealt with are not questions concerning mental stability and characteristics of those who enslaved us, And the question is not the fact that these people are still influential today, and the question as to whether they should continue to be influential is not dealt with at all. So, consequently, our children are left with an inferiority complex. The subject is left half unexplored, and even is being brought up and taught serves as a means of maintaining the system while appearing to be a liberal concession to the radicals of the 60s. We must recognize that Americans have a stake in ensuring the continuation of the failure of large segments of its population, particularly the African American population. We must recognize that contradiction in this society is of major importance in determining the problems of our communities. That is, the people without the love who talk about love, without love who talk about love most often. It is the people who are ready to go to war and have gone to war and destroyed hundreds and thousands who talk about peace. It is the people who destroy our children's minds in schools who talk a great deal about education. And we will see these kinds of contradictions go on and on repeatedly. We will see even in the very legal structure of the system its contradictions, which conspire to destroy those who are not part of the ruling class or group. End of that section. Anybody have any thoughts on the section is awesome, filled with contradictions?
I think that's funny. You remember on Facebook a while back, I stopped doing that. I guess I should do that again. I used to put up bedtime stories all of the time where pointing out that same contradiction where you're telling the child, once upon a time, these evil people did this, and they're still doing it, the end. And so that's what really we're doing. We continue to do this with our children. There's a contradiction here. These people did this to us, and they're still here, and they're still in charge, and we're not going to do nothing about it.
That's right.
We're just going to just let it all go.
That's right. And that's how that external locus of control is created in the child. That's how it's passed down from one generation to the next, because the parent, its job is to get rid of the boogeyman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we look at how the Europeans responded to their false flag threats. When they told white people there was a boogeyman threatening white supremacy, they went out and searched the world over like they was going to go out and kill them. They was going to turn over every stone in the nation and find it. That's what they're supposed to do. That's what the culture is to expect, that they are going to remove threats to the society, to the culture.
Find the Holy Grail.
What'd you say?
Find the Holy Grail.
Find the Holy Grail. And what we do is black people, we'll say, oh, yeah, some threats out there. Child said, what you going to do about it, daddy and mama? Oh, nothing. We're just going to tell you to just, you better keep yourself from getting hurt. We put the burden of responsibility on the child to protect him or herself from white supremacy. But then we I know all of our ovaries and testes get swole when we pretend we see a threat in our own community from one of our own members, provided that threat doesn't come with a lot of money benefiting us. You know what I'm saying? If it's a relative in the family victimizing the family, if that person is financially strong and able to grant wishes, the relatives will not pursue justice. They'll say, oh, that's just Uncle Bob. We know how he do. He like to touch on the little girls. We ain't going to say nothing. Well, maybe you should go and say hi. He might give you a present this year. Go sit on his lap. He'll give you a quarter. I mean, come on, that's what black culture is doing. They don't want to sit around and look, oh, I don't know why this is like this. That's because that's how we act. We perpetuate. So the contradictions exist because we don't challenge them. We don't say, they always talking about education. I ain't let them educate my child because I see what they've done to our people. we should not allow those. We shouldn't believe them. We shouldn't accept them or tolerate them. We should not allow them to tell us about love. They shouldn't be able to let them tell us nothing about love and spirituality. I don't care how right they are about any particular point. I'm saying culturally. I'm not saying, you know, you shouldn't read a book, you know, whatever. But, like, when I read books about spirituality, sometimes I don't even quote the authors on the show. I take it as my own. That's how I do sometimes. It ain't that profound. I say, this is kind of simple. Sometimes I just go, I just straight up lift it. My idea now.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying? And that's how we got to start doing. That's what they do to us.
That's it.
They take this. No. No,
they invented everything.
Yeah, they take shit back. I'm gonna take the stuff back. I mean, yeah, just adopt it and now it's yours. And just republish it and don't give no citations. Paraphrase everything. It's all yours.
You know, you went through a lot of different things in the long part that you were reading.
Okay.
A lot of different areas. And in the beginning, to me, he was talking about basically the stop flossing factor.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when he kind of got into the other stuff. But it's interesting how he was putting even the conscious community on blast.
Yeah, he sure did. He spent pretty ways on that from the third paragraph and the fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he did that.
Don't get me started.
Right. He's going to do it again later on in the book.
Right.
He's going to hit him some more. He's going to hit him. He's going to bring him how they always talking about Egypt this and Egypt that, and then they're going to be wearing chains or something. I forgot what he said. But he went off.
Mm-hmm.
We do like to, we don't study our history to learn about how we built what we built so we can connect to that ancient knowledge and rebuild it. That's the point. That's supposed to be the objective of learning about it. Chick and a Diop and Van Sertum and these guys pointed to it, told you what was there. The next generation job was to go and find out how to use it, to master it. Then the third generation from Sheikh and Adip was supposed to figure out how to resurrect it, how to bring it into modern to modern times for the exclusive benefit of black folks.
Mm-hmm.
That's what three generations from Van Sertum is supposed to be doing. But we're not. Some of us are learning how to do it, but it needs to be part of the cultural education of all black folks within our sphere of influence. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And once it becomes a part of that cultural education, you know, that's all we talk about, that's what we live. We live our culture, our technology, our society, our ideology, our spirituality. We live it, it's a part, and we don't share that with outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
Europeans don't share their stuff with us. They share with the black folks a version, a slave version of what it is they teach. Their Christianity is different from the black Christianity of slave. White colonial Christianity is not the same as the Christianity taught in black Christian churches.
Black Christianity taught in black churches is a submissive Christianity, and theirs is an onward Christian soldier mentality.
That's right. Theirs is one of conquest and ours is one of submission. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
How to turn the other cheek, how to bend over, how to touch your toes, how to grit it, how to pillow bite, you know.
Turn the other cheek.
Making me uncomfortable a little bit.
Spread the cheek. Everything
molest
involving.
Molest the congregation.
The congregation. All this stuff always involves cheeks, if you notice. Cheeks are involved.
This is going to be
a steal money from the poorest people you can.
That's right. Get the money from them. Molest everybody in the whole congregation. Somebody was talking to us. Who are we talking to? I don't know. They were telling us about how the way it works is that once you get to be, it was a guest on African Conversation. Somebody was telling us. Was talking about, and I don't want to mention the name. It was off the red conversation, and they were saying how they get the position, and then it means no accountability once they get the religious authority. And that's the exact opposite of what the Bible actually teaches. I'm like, okay, this is what people think? I didn't know that. Because I don't go to church. No accountability. The Bible says, yeah, see, once they get that role, that position as the clergy, then they can do anything. I'm like, really? Oh, that's why everybody's getting raped.
You don't go to church? You're going to hell.
You're going to hell. Yeah. Yeah, hell. But not getting raped. Yeah, I see.
I'm not sure if I could even stay on. I'm going to have to get off the line here. I didn't realize you didn't go to church, especially Smith Baptist Church, Ezekiel number 5.
On the
church,
side of the
Ministry
road in Jericho.
Jesus.
Missionary
Jericho
Baptist
Church,
Church of Zion.
Right. Right. And that's why I always advocate, no, you can't take their version. They have a double, that's why it's contradictory. They tell you, oh, do this right here, but submit. We're not submitting, you submit. And, okay, we're going to let you gloat of your past, but what we're going to do, we're gonna, now they're going to Africa and try to talk about destroying the pyramids and Kush.
Mm-hmm.
See, now they went over there in the 19th century, in the 16th century, with the expedition to discover all the mysteries of ancient Egypt. And once they found all this black stuff all over the place, then they want to go and tear it all up.
They already blew all the noses off everything.
Yeah.
And I guess they determined that wasn't enough.
See, that's another contradiction. If you think this such... We all know this is antique. We're sitting there. They always trying to destroy something that don't reflect them, but then they always want to talk about preserving life and nature and all this and monuments and then, but they want to destroy yours. And black people are not outraged nowhere. I don't say nowhere. That's not true. I'm exaggerating, okay? I'm being dramatic. The most black people do not express any indignation. Let's just say that. I mean, just at the thought of them saying, that's what we're going to do. We're going to dig up all your dead bodies. Because we don't understand, because that to admit that is to admit that we're in contradiction to white supremacy. That is to oppose it. And most black people have submitted to it. And they don't want to rise up in any form or fashion. They don't want no subversion. No, they don't want to alienate themselves from it by learning languages or do socialization. They want to stay in it. You know, and so that's how it is. All right, well, what we do, we're going to take a quick, short recess from this discussion. We're going to continue with the book, Falsification of African Consciousness, Lecture 2, and we're going to pick back up here after the break and present personal restraint.
Join us for the sweetest show on internet radio, Honey Soul Radio, every Tuesday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central, and 10 p.m. Eastern. Join your hostess, the Honey Diva, and Miss Lady P. Every Tuesday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central, and 10 p.m. Eastern. Honey Soul Radio on blogtalkradio.com. Now add a little honey to your flavor.
According to Henry David Thoreau, a man is rich in proportion to the number of things that he can afford to let alone. With that in mind, we find our people locked in a permanent cycle of poverty, especially those who mistakenly believe that they somehow have arrived, only a paycheck from foreclosure. Although we find black incomes at an all-time high, we still lack wealth, and we also lack the understanding of the purpose of wealth, which is safety, growth, and security. But it's not hard to turn this around. It will first require us to take a look at the bigger picture. And also, it will require us to stop flossing. we have to understand that that $10 that we waste every day equals $300 a month. The same $300 that you find yourself missing every month. The same $300 required for you to invest into your family, into your community, and into your nation. Please join us on Facebook, African Money.
Listen to Love in Black with Charles and Jolivet on the Tribal Family Station on blogtalkradio.com.
There we will share our experiences and our insights on marriage and love, sex, respect, and honor. We're on every Thursday evening on the Tribal Family Station.
Black in public, black out loud, and black on purpose. For some, it's where your deprogramming begins, and it's where others on the path come for fellowship. Come on in and kick your shoes off. Visit us at www.facebook.com/blackinpublic. Put your fist in the air, y'all, because we're going to keep it black.
Listen in to African Conversations on the African Knowledge Network, where we will converse with researchers about matters significant to the African diaspora community. Join us on Facebook on the African Conversations community page. Enjoy the dialogue on African Conversations on blogtalkradio.com.
African Knowledge Beyond the Book appears every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. We are a literary society dedicated to the study of African-based psychoanalytical texts. We hope you will join us as we delve into the inner working of our African consciousness. African Knowledge Beyond the Book, every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time on blogtalkradio.com.
Greetings, I'm Eric Teamer, host of Common Sense Conversations. Join me every Tuesday and Friday when I put common sense where it ain't so common. That's Common Sense Conversations, every Tuesday and Friday, 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central, 3:30 Pacific. Common Sense Conversations on blogtalkradio.com.
Welcome to AfricanImpressions.com. African Impressions is a black-owned business that offers products made by the global African community. African Impressions offers the finest in African-made jewelry, craft, clothing, and so much more. As the renaissance of the African community rapidly approaches, you need to add acquiring products crafted by members of the global African family to your repertoire of activities. We must rediscover more of our ancient cultural habits, which we struggle to regain, and incorporate them into our daily lives. Support African craftsmen and women by shopping at AfricanImpressions.com today. Hope to see you there.
The Woman's Song Community Experience is an extension of the Woman's Song Facebook community. Woman's Song was created with the mission to promote sisterhood and solidarity amongst women of color the world over. The Community Experience radio broadcast is an outreach effort to bring lecturers, authors, healers, spiritualists, and others with the necessary information to assist us in our campaign to repair ourselves. Our community is in dire need of reformation. During this Renaissance period of awareness, we will honor the womb man, and we seek to bridge the gap of understanding, love, and the upliftment of our sisters in crisis. Will you join us? We need your help in bringing this new awakening to all who desire its enlightenment. Become a part of our commitment to elevation as we work together to lift the divine earth to their rightful places. Woman Song. She's singing.
Welcome back to tonight's feature, The Falsification of African Consciousness by Dr. Amos N. Wilson. We're on page 77 in this part two of this lecture series, and we'll begin the second part with procedural liberties and personal restraints. The Constitution of the United States, as beautiful as it may sound, is ultimately an elitist document. The Russian Constitution is the most beautiful document when you read it, and yet we see a minority of white Russians ruling over Muslims, other minorities, and other Europeans, despite what the Constitution says. The Constitution of our nation guarantees what we call procedural liberties, while not guaranteeing what we may call the real nitty-gritty substantial liberties. What do we mean by that? It guarantees that certain procedures will be followed. That we can go to court, be heard before a so-called jury of our peers, and so forth. But it does guarantee a freedom of hunger. Does it guarantee housing, health care, true education? Does it guarantee full employment? Does it guarantee safe working conditions? Does it guarantee a non-polluted earth? Does it guarantee true equality and equal distribution of resources? The Constitution does not guarantee those things. It guarantees us certain procedural rights and rules. It says then that we can go to court the same way the rich people go to court. What can be heard in a court of law? That we must be read our Miranda rights upon arrest. But there is a difference between procedure and what actually happens. Certainly we may read our rights and certainly we may go to court, but without the money to pay for a good lawyer belonging to the wrong ethnic group, belonging to the wrong class, while we may go through the procedure, does not guarantee justice. Consequently, the justice and the legal establishment become the very sources of injustice and illegality. We are therein faced with the contradiction wherein the very law and order that is written into the Constitution becomes a double standard. I remember reading a phrase once that said, "The freedom of the press belongs to those who own the press." We can thus reiterate that the Constitution and the legal system in this society are not a neutral instrument, and that the law belongs to those who write it and those who use it to control the resources of the society. Business crime is more damaging than most working class crime and so-called lower class crime. As a matter of fact, we tend to not even see business crime as crime itself, but instead as violations of codes. Not as following procedure, even though it may rob people of jobs. It may rob people of their very lives. How many people from DuPont will be arrested and put in jail and locked away for killing those thousands of Indians? How many people will be destroyed or executed as a result of the stealing of monies and millions of dollars from the general populace as a whole? Will Chase Manhattan be permitted to go out of business? or with Citibank for the mistake of making bad loans. No, they won't. What will happen? They will rob the very monies out of our pockets so that they may stay in business. It has been established that the Wild robbery, burglary, auto theft, and larceny account for 15% of theft against property, embezzlement, fraud, forgery, and commercial theft. The so-called white-collar crimes are responsible for 78% of crimes against property. It is difficult for people to even see a so-called top business executive as a criminal. The very concept of the criminal has an image attached to it. We shall find, of course, that to a great extent, the image is non-European, non-middle class, and non-upper class. But is an image that portrays the so-called lower class, or that is non-European. It is an interest to note that Zaccaro, cousin of the vice president candidate Geraldine Ferraro, could steal millions and pay a $1,000 fine and continue in business, while our sons and daughters who may steal nickels are sent to jail and executed, done in, beaten, and assassinated by the police. We are gouged for rent and other kinds of things by the system, yet those that gouge us are perceived as pillars of the community. These are the kinds of contradictions that breed disrespect for the law and disrespect for those who enforce the law. It does not matter if a law is written in neutral terms. What reality matters is whether that law is enforced non-discriminately. And this society is one that is famous for writing beautiful laws which are enforced in a non-equal fashion. We recognize that the policeman is not merely an officer of the law, not merely there to enforce the law, but that the policeman has discretion in enforcing the law and can determine when and under what circumstances the law will be enforced and against which people, regardless of how that law is written. So a law may be on the books in a non-discriminatory manner, can be executed in a non-discriminatory fashion. Therefore, we recognize that the black individual who exhibits the same so-called behavior as a white individual is far more likely to be arrested, convicted, and jailed for that behavior. So a cop makes a determination based upon the individual's race, upon the individual's gender, upon the individual's political and class characteristics as to whether arrest, conviction, and so forth will take place. So we recognize that a law, even though it is written in neutral terms, may be used for the purpose of intimidation, harassment, and a means of immobilizing individuals. The very charges against arrested individuals may depend upon the racial nature, the class, the politics of the individual's background. These are the kinds of contradictions that have destroyed the personalities of our people, that have destroyed our self-confidence, have destroyed our self-concept as a people. These contradictions, therefore, have created a psychic situation that is often diagnosed as neurosis and psychosis, that are often used as a means of maintaining a political system as such. We are talking about the New York 8 here. We again see the system of law that is being used to enforce thought control of people being arrested for so-called conspiracy for what they may or may not think. We see a system of law enforcement that's been spent great time and energy that went on for almost 2 years of eavesdropping into people's personal lives, of placing electronic wiretaps, bugs all over the households of these people, of putting eavesdropping equipment into every room, including the bathroom, that puts bugging equipment into their telephones, that picked up the conversations of not only those individuals who have supposedly involved in the conspiracy, but those other individuals who may have called and talked to them for various other reasons. We see a system that generates a law that says you cannot detain these people without bail if they are perceived as some kind of major danger to the community. That soon after it passes, the law goes right out and arrests a group of people and comes prepared to destroy those people. We see a system that is not so much concerned with defending the individual as defending the prerogatives of the state and making certain that the state has a monopoly on the weapons, that the citizens are disarmed and so much as a means of preventing citizens from killing each other, but as a means of keeping the citizens from killing the government that rules over them. We must be aware of the European, who discusses a lot of social issues in terms of individual behavior, such as, we don't want people to go out there taking the law into their own hands. It is the police that take the law into their own hands. When the police engage in racial discrimination, when the policeman beats, shoots, destroys, and kills our people in the streets, it's the police who are taking the law into their own hands, not the people themselves. It is the police who are the vigilantes for the establishment and for maintaining the status quo. The situation is reversed. It is the police, then, who have the means of holding people hostage, that is, in jails and in prisons, and who harass our people, and who lock our people in dungeons, and who exercise penalties and terror. Who is going to guard the guardians of our so-called law? We see the law, then, may not be the problem. It is the execution of the law. We see the law used as a means of repression of dissent. The police are used as a means of maintaining the social status quo and social order, not so much as when a person is purposely disturbing the peace, but where a person threatens to disturb the social system itself. Police officers see Americanism as being equivalent to capitalism, that one cannot be American if one is not also a capitalist, and therefore to be anti-capitalist is to be anti-American. To be for a different system of distributing the wealth of the nation, which belongs to the nation, is to be anti-American. To concern oneself with a more equitable means of distributing justice and freedom, to question the current system of inequality, is to be perceived as un-American and as a threat to national security. It is to be made fair game for repression and the denial of the democratic rights that are supposedly guaranteed by the Constitution. We see often that the only crime of many people, such as the eight, is to think in different terms and to talk about different types of arrangement and social relations, but that speech and thought laid the basis for the very rights being taken away from them, the right of bail and other rights. Under the guise of defending democracy, the security agencies of our national legal departments are able to deny so-called dissenters their democratic rights and to move the nation closer to a police state, which is exactly where we are seeing here. And therefore, we see telephones tapped, offices raided, records and funds of dissident organizations stolen by the police themselves. We see agencies of our law enforcement departments engaged in theft, breaking, and entering. We see agents of the law engaged in threatening members of the non-conforming groups, maligning the reputations of those who dare to question the system, beating, murdering, arresting, and trumping up charges against those who dare even to think out loud or to indicate that they are looking at other possibilities for dealing with the tremendous problems we have today. We see a system that uses procedural rights, rights to a trial, the right to a jury, the right to go before a grand jury as a means of repression. Oh, the eight may win their case, but will they really win their case? Did Angela Davis really win her case? Or was the very process of fighting the charges, the years of energy, blood, sweat, tears, and the years and the money that went into the defense of Angela and others like her, the very means of repression expressing itself in the system? By the time these individuals get through fighting in the courts that allow them to be heard before a jury of their peers, the issues, the troubles over which they were arrested in the first place, often have them behind or have been destroyed by the very process itself. their very arrest and their very going through the procedure, even if the procedure is neutral or equal, still intimidates the rest of us and makes the rest of us conform. So we see a system that may even free us then congratulates itself. Oh, the system works, doesn't it? But only after, of course, it works. But it is set up such that in the end, it will still attain its oppressive goals. You have the right to equal housing. The law says so. We even have agencies that can complain about the being discriminated against. All that is set up. We have the right to move into any neighborhood we want to, if we can afford it. Here is a system that grants these rights and simultaneously takes them away. The very means of fully exercising them. This is a system that uses all types of psycho controls for law and order. Once we are arrested, once we are convicted, our rights are denied. Now we can be subject to electroshock, psychosurgery, etc. Recall that in the 60s, the dissidents, those who were part of the riot situation, those who protested against the oppression of black people, were seen as sick and were seen as having a problem. And one of the means proposed for dealing with the problem was to cut parts of their brains out, was to go directly to their skulls and lobotomize them because of a diagnosis of illness, and more than anything else, because of political diagnosis. Some of you saw the Amsterdam News, I believe. It came out Thursday. It discusses the experimentation on our people by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Central Intelligence Agency, and other agencies inside and outside of this country. Even in South Africa and other places, the experimentation on our people is taking place currently and certainly has taken place in the past. We must recognize that the kind of thing continues and is part of a so-called law and order system that exists today. That's the end of that section. And I know it's so long, so I guess I'm going to have to recap before I can answer anybody what they like to say. Hope some of y'all, I know y'all like to take good notes. I know y'all taking notes, right? So,
of course.
That's what a good listener to a book club meeting would do.
You don't tell me what to do.
Then who you think you is? But we got, you know, people talking about the law. We got to follow the law. You know, the law is crap. You know, that's just it. I mean, some of us, we can try to, you know, try to learn it, whatever, use it, put it for your way in and out, but you still got to disrespect it, though. Even if you learn it, you must have contempt for it. You use it only to your own advantage, and when it don't serve your purposes, you know, screw it, and then you do what you want to do anyway. And also, I can't get my people to understand that.
No.
Use their law to your advantage, and when it don't serve you, if they lost and disadvantage you, figure out how to not do it.
Okay, you have a caller from 504.
Yes, caller from 504.
Hello.
You're live.
You okay,
book club. Hello. I think I recognize this voice. Sounds strangely familiar. I mean, familiarly familiar.
Oh. Hey, y'all. What's up?
What's up?
What's going on?
How y'all doing?
All right. What's going on?
Hey, y'all. I wanted to know in regards to the law, since how is it that, I guess, we can circumvent these laws and, I don't know, not get busted in the process. That's what I really want to know. You know, a lot of us, we talk too much, we don't know what to say, or then we say too much. So how is it that we can circumvent these laws?
Okay, the first of all is we have to have a culture, philosophy of contempt. That's number one. You must hate their laws. You must see them as inferior because they come from a mind of a criminogenic society and a perverse culture. So mm-hmm. we understand, we must recognize that we live under their culture of oppression. That's the problem. Most people, we don't look. When people say, oh, that's the law, them people, if you ask those people, do you think their laws are just? Of course, they're the law. They don't question at all the correctness, the appropriateness of these people ruling on over us. So, mm-hmm. like us, you know, like, you know, we follow laws, you know. I don't run traffic lights. You say? Because it's to my advantage not to run the traffic light. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Follow the law as much as, you know, as it benefits you to do so. Mm-hmm. And when it doesn't, well, you got to take the appropriate precautions. How do I say precautions? Because you have to be mm-hmm. cautious. And pre, meaning you have to get a plan and get that stuff together because you know it's people out to black folks.
Mm-hmm.
That want you basically to submit to more white power.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to figure out if you can pull it off, and even to stop, even if it means go back to obeying the law that you had broken. You know what I'm saying? You
mm-hmm.
got to be tricky.
That's just like tax laws. You know, mm-hmm. every year the richest people figure out because the loophole's already put there.
Mm-hmm.
For them to avoid paying as much taxes as they possibly can, and so they don't even they're not even respecting their own laws. They're trying to get around doing that. And there's a lot of loopholes where you could pay as little as you possibly can, and that's what they spend their time
lot,
doing. And we pride ourselves.
The loophole is still another law. It's just a loophole, but it's still another law. So. I'm talking about just in a way to circumvent it all together.
Well, like his loophole. See, one thing about these loopholes, the white power system might not allow you to use a loophole.
Right, that's true.
Loophole ain't the law. See, the loophole really is what they call degrees of freedom. And when a black person or somebody who's not in good standing with white supremacy, they when it exercises that pathway to that loophole, they say that person is circumventing the law.
Mm-hmm.
That's the charge.
Yeah, Rob Johnson knows about that. That's true.
Right.
Well, what we often do. Is we want to say it. It's, you see Wesley Snipes. We mm-hmm. we often want to say I don't have to do this because it's my right. That's not circumventing that the law. That's you're announcing it. You're talking about you have rights and you blah blah blah, and you're just not getting the whole thing. The whole thing is to get around it, not say anything, because the whole purpose is for this thing to fall. It's not for you to show them. And very often, we spend a lot of time trying to show them, and that's why we can't get around anything. I do very little of what I'm supposed to do, and I wouldn't go into details because then I'd be doing the same thing, saying, I'm doing this. We pride ourselves in following the rules of these same people who are criminals.
Right.
We often do that. I'm going by the law.
Yeah, like black lawyers and legal experts, I say, yeah, study it. Now, tell us how to manipulate their system, and then, you know, whenever we can, but when we're not going to, it's not tough, man, we need to try to actually conceal our activities and assist that. And one thing I liked about the slave narratives, and I know you're familiar with many of them, if you remember, people used to go from plantation to plantation, they'd run away, they could always find shelter and quarter, in the slave quarters,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes people would rat them out, and sometimes they would be able to stay, and not all the time. But I was talking to someone today, and we were discussing this, and I was saying, how many, if you felt that you had to run away, could you just go to a black community and just be safe? Find shelter.
We all know the answer to that one.
You know
yep,
that?
Sure do.
Right.
Hang on, you have another call in 832. 832, you're live.
Charles and Jellibit, good evening to you.
Good evening.
It's Warren Houston inside the zone.
Oh, hey, how you doing? Welcome.
I'm good. I just chimed in. I saw you all on, and I just chimed in. I hear you all talking about the subject of law, which is one of my favorite topics. I love law, and as you all know, I teach a law class here in Houston. It's open to mm-hmm. the community. And what I look at is this we as black people, we are entering another revolution. And the revolution that we're entering now, I think it deals more with intelligence than it does the color of our skin. You know, this is an era where we're going to have to be, I think our biggest problem is knowledge or education. And the first thing is that we lack knowledge of ourselves. We don't even know who we are. So on top of not knowing who we are, you know, and then you get caught up in a situation going to a courtroom, and one of the maxims of law is he that does not know his rights have no rights. You know, a person going hollering about, oh, I know my rights, well, they know from the jump. When you holler, you know your rights, you don't know anything. Because if you know your rights, you wouldn't have to tell me you know them. You would show me that you know your rights. We have a constitution. We have a state constitution. And I was showing it to my class, you look at the state constitution, you look at the United States Constitution, you can see complete violations of both of them. Well, why is that? Well, when you step up in the courtroom, you're not even in an American court. You just stepped up under an admiralty jurisdiction on the military law, on the martial law. So if you understand, any time you go into the military, you have no rights. This is like the guys that join the Army or the Navy. You know, boy, bring your behind here. You know, you belong to Uncle Sam now. You don't have no rights. You do what the military tells you to do. So when you step in a court of law, you're not even in an American courtroom. And this is one of the situations, one of the problems that we have, because we don't even know where we're at. We don't know how to handle the situation. And it's like any game. If I don't know how to play poker, there's no sense of me sitting down to the table, because once I sit down to the table, I'm going to get my money took.
Yes, you got to understand, when you get find yourself locked up in that, you know, in that type of arena, while I'm advocating people who interest in that, I'm also advocating there be a contempt for that system as well. I'm saying while you're learning it, you still hate it. Still figure out ways of, and if you figure out you can't win, help people. We should be helping ourselves. We should have a community of philosophy, ideology of saying, screw it. If we ain't going to win, if you like it's going to be bad, we can't slam dunk them and run them. Okay, well, the next plan is get one of us off these shores. You see what I'm saying? You know? We're either going to go, we're going to win, and we ain't losing is not an option. But we have a culture of surrender. Oh, well, you know, we just surrender, and whatever happens, you know, we just going to go with it. We ain't, you know. Europeans
will
not tolerate.
We've been indoctrinated through spirituality. We've been indoctrinated through spirituality. You know, we were taught that from kids.
Spirituality, all the home, you know, upbringing, just, you know, the parents, you know, teaching you that, you know, you black, you don't have no control, you have no power. Your parents aren't going to protect you from white supremacy. You know, we'll tell you about all these bad things that happen to our family, but we're not going to do nothing about it. And so, yes, all a part of the culture of submission, about the culture of apathy. Where there comes a time, it has always been that time, that we have to say we're not going to pass that on. We're not going to pass on that kind of behavior and thinking. If we'll say, okay, you know what, yeah, we're under oppression right now, but you know what, we're going to reconnect to our past. Yeah, you got to learn how to learn these fake laws and these bullcrap rules of this game, whatever they got set up, and we're going to play it as long as we can make it work for us, and when it ain't work for us, we're going to win. We're going to do something different to make sure we win, because we're not going to tolerate them locking us up in prisons anymore. We got to say as a community, because one person can decide to start a movement, but he can't actually do it all by himself. You know what I mean?
Right.
So once we get the ideology going, we can say, you know what, they going to jail stuff and working slave labor is over.
Mm-hmm.
Once we make up our mind, we're not going to fill up the jails. We're not going to fill up the jails.
All right, hang on a second. You have another call of 646.
Yes, hello. Hi, this is Kenny. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes, we can hear you, Kenny. How you doing, brother?
Hey, what's going on, Charles? How you doing, Delavie?
What's going on? Good evening.
What's going on? Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment and just a quick question. And that was the comment is, you know that in communist Russia, they have a black community. You know that black people live in Russia.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, okay, good. All right, and the question is, could you give me a comparison and contrast to America's democracy, capitalism, to communism? Could you give me like a comparison, like a, you know?
From what my understanding is, communism or socialism, because that's what they claim, it says the non-socialist Soviet Republic, all the wealth belongs to the state. Now, who is the state is the next question. The state is the nobility, that is the aristocracy. The aristocracy, the state are one. And so, And that's the deal. So they said there is no profit, there's no business profit, because everything that the people do is of the state. They mean no cut for you, really. They make everything off the top, and, you know, you just get just enough to subsist or whatever they permit you to have. So this day, the whole feudal system, you know, in continuation. Now, capitalism isn't really much different.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Capitalism is about, they'll say, okay, you can do whatever you want, but to make whatever we allow you to do to make money, just so long, you know, as we culturally benefit, like, say, slavery, prostitution, child slavery, trafficking, or whatever, child labor. You can do that. You can have all these businesses. We're about making money. But it's no different from really socialism. They'll say, well, you have all this private property, but who really has private property?
Mm-hmm.
Really, aristocracy own property here. Mostly method aristocracy, they don't pay taxes on nothing, no property. They claim you own property. They say, yeah, you own, but we'll let you hold a deed. Everything here is pretense. It's more of an illusion. I would say the communism or socialism actually is more in your face.
Real, right. That's what I was just going to say. It's more real.
It's more realistic.
Because how do you own property if you don't pay taxes on it? They can take it.
Right. They tell you you have the right to own this. Here's the deed, the titles, and all this, and you're in charge, and then let something happen, you don't pay them taxes, and they're going to show you how much that stuff really is yours.
Right.
Your car actually belongs to the state. You know what I'm saying? Your car ain't even yours.
Right. Don't pay that your insurance.
Yeah, tax title license, auto insurance, all these other things, and they come and they're taking it.
Plus, the more you make, the more they take, you know.
You're right. The more you make, the more they take, especially if you're not in the clique. See, if you in a nobility, aristocratic, or in their guilds, they got these secret organizations they running around here representing. You get taken, so make more money. You gonna pay more. But if you in their guilds and in their little gangs, they have numerous ones. Then they don't have to pay because they've shown and demonstrated their devotion to the advancement of white supremacy. You know what
Very
I'm saying?
Well. Thank you. Okay.
So, you know, I'm pretty sure there's some other differences that I overlooked and glossed over. I'm sure Brother Warren could probably, do better than that. So, you know what I'm saying? Hey, Warren, you want to hit it?
Okay, I guess he's gone.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah, that's in there. That's real.
Mm-hmm.
Capitalism ain't no real difference. It's the presentation.
Yep.
The presentation is that the wealth
is yours, and it's really not. Well, let me ask you something. Do you, the black people that live over there in Russia that's been, you know, living under the communism, what do you think their living situation is like over there? I mean, do you think it's easy going for them?
No, I don't think it's even going nowhere. Black folks living under white power.
There you go.
That's it.
White man in charge and black folks living there?
The end.
It's screwed. It's very messed up. I don't know anything about their communities, but I can imagine it's most depressing.
the only thing they got that they can lay claim to is the black Russian.
That's it. Pushkin, something he wrote, you know what I'm saying? He was dead. And then he was killed in a duel, you know what I'm saying?
A drink.
Like Russian. Yeah, I was saying about that author, right. Yeah, Pushkin. He actually invented the Russian language and literature. He did all that, and then they still blew his head off.
Here's Brother Warren. He's back. He missed the question.
Yeah.
I had my phone on mute. I couldn't unmute it quick enough.
Oh, okay.
I'm here. I hadn't gone anywhere. I just had some background noise. I didn't want to interfere with the background, so I muted it. But I'm okay.
Oh, the question, you heard me?
What was the question again?
The question was explain the difference between capitalism and socialism or communism.
Well, capitalism, if you don't mind me taking just a few minutes to get, because this is one I love to talk about. You have five types of government, and those five types of government are going to be what they consider monarchy, anarchy, oligarchy, democracy, or republic. Now, when you look at that, try to be quick. A monarchy means ruled by one, but that only exists in theory, because if you have one ruler, they're really representing a small few. Then you have an anarchy where there is no government rule at all, like what's going over there now in Somalia. And then you have oligarchy, which is ruled by a few, which is basically what's happening here in America. You know, you got one person, but they're actually ruled by the few. And then you have democracy or demo, rule of the demon, which ties into socialism. Which socialism, democracy is only a front for socialism, and socialism, from democracy turns into socialism, and socialism turns into communism.
Okay.
Basically, what happens when you're dealing with democracy, because democracy doesn't care about law. Democracy says what the people say, so it doesn't matter whether you're right or wrong. If the majority says, you know, do this, then we're going to go with what the majority says. The hell with what law says.
Right.
Yeah, that's why this country was supposed to have been built up on a republic form of government, which is ruled by law. You know.
Right.
So, yeah,
right.
If you're looking at democracy, you're looking at socialism. It's a turning wheel. That's the whole point of democracy, to bring you into socialism, which brings you into communism. Very well.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah, and see, they always promoting, talking about who's a minority and who's a majority. And even though black people, African people in America are a numerical majority, they consider us a minority. They'll say, oh, we a minority, but come on. When we read all these reports about what was the ratio, white to black, in the antebellum period, they was always telling, oh, it's like 20 Africans to one European. Remember those? Anybody read
what?
Anything about slaves?
Yes.
They would talk like that. Oh, man, we're outnumbered. And now they switched the game to telling us it's so few of you, you're outnumbered. Now the point is that it's never been about numbers, because Europeans are a numerical majority on the planet, but they consider themselves a majority. And the majority they're talking about, they consider they had this thing, I don't know if anybody studies rabbinic, you know, Talmud or whatever. They always talk about a majority being. They used to, because in some cases they'll say the majority is numerical. In some cases they'll say the majority is because who has more power or influence.
Yep.
Mhm. European will switch definitions of anything to suit himself. You see what I'm saying?
Repeat that.
Oh, it changed any definitions to suit himself.
Thank you. Okay, Mara. Keep going.
You know what I'm saying? Now, I'm not advocating changing definitions and lying and confusing people, you know, like in that kind of way. I'm just saying, you know, yeah, you can understand the nature of their system and use it appropriately, and understand the nature of their system, realizing how you're going to handle it. And then say, hey, you know what? If I can't win, kick all the pieces off and knock it on the floor. That's what they're doing. But we let them tie our hands. We say, oh, these are the rules of the game. Oh, we got to do this. When they don't follow the rules of the game all the way to the end, even if it means them losing. I heard a white man once say, I think he was a politician. He said, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying to win. Mm-hmm. And I'm not telling nobody to cheat. I'm just letting you know that's who you're playing against.
I am.
You have another caller in 732.
Yes.
You're playing against somebody that ain't trying to play the game for the, you know, for the right. No, he's paying to win at any cost, and that's not the cost of him losing. Let me just clarify that. Caller, you're on the live now. African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club.
Hi, how are you?
How fine are you? What's your name?
I'm good. My name is Kimberly.
How you doing, Kim? What's up?
I'm doing good. You know, I just came in a little bit, but I caught when you guys were talking about socialism and, you know, communism or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
My question to you is, do you feel that Obama is trying to change the United States into socialism? Because I have so many people that when I try to defend, you know, Obama on his views and, you know, certain things that he's trying to do, they always say to me, well, if you like a socialistic president, then yeah, you know, Obama is the one to vote for him again. So, I mean, what does that mean when someone says that to you? I mean, did you kind of understand where I was coming from?
Yeah, I feel what you're saying. Every American president is socialist. Okay? I'm just letting you know that same person telling you old Obama socialists, other guys, not socialists, mm-hmm. they're lying. All of them are. They're all leading this society to the same conclusion.
Yep.
They just have different methods by which to check the objective. That's right. It. We don't vote. Voting. I ain't voted since 98. So if you think I'm an irresponsible person and I'm not credible to talk, then I understand. Right. It's been a long time. This is crap. Obama's crap. Everybody who seeks political appointments are crap and political office are crap. I see it.
Oh, my goodness.
Right. I have no... this is why... That's what the whole game is all about. Courts, elections. It's like voting for which devil you want ruling or in hell. That's what you're doing. I mean, you could do it if you want to. I'm not telling you not to. It's what you want to do. You know,
it's all white supremacy.
It's all
it's
white.
All white supremacy.
Yep. Whole yep. thing. Obama's a white supremacist. Clinton's a white supremacist. Bush is a white supremacist. Eisenhower's a white supremacist. George Washington's a white supremacist. Everybody's a white supremacist.
But what, not what? Abraham Lincoln?
Yes, he's a white supremacist. Everybody's a white supremacist.
He's free.
You know what? But I don't understand. Why do you think that? Why do you think everybody
what?
Is a white supremacist? Because to me, I think that white supremacy is, okay, you know, quite naturally, the United States of America, the world, so we say, is definitely ran by white people or Jewish people, if you want to really get technical.
They white too. They ain't real
no
Jews.
White.
They white folks.
But, I mean, and that's been an argument for a long time, you know, about this whole 12 lost tribes and what tribe they come from, what tribe we come from, and yada, yada, so forth.
Yeah, I know
but
all about
my
that.
Thing is,
oh, we got for
why
that
do
on
you, why do,
the network.
Why do
call in
always,
over there.
Hello?
Yeah, I was just thinking, I have a program where we discuss that kind of thing. Yeah, but I'm familiar.
Oh,
I'm,
okay.
I'm with you, though.
But why do we feel like, you know, it's such white supremacy? Because, like, my views on white supremacy is basically white people just loving white people and not liking any other race and want to keep other races.
Oh.
Down and you know the extinction I'm trying to get that word out of other races.
I think we keep thinking that they don't like us,
right?
And there's a problem there. Everybody who comes in that office of the president is there to maintain the hegemony of the United States and its European allies.
That's right.
Yes.
He's a white
that's
supremacist.
It.
That's his job. That's why he was voted in. That's why. Well, you know, so
selected
put in there, and that's his job. The job title's not changing. White supremacy ends when the job title changes, and there's a black person in office. Then it's something different. But that's not going to happen. That's what he's there for, to maintain the hegemony of Europe, of the United States and its European allies, including Israel.
Ian. Kim, let me ask you a question. If the tables were turned, and let's say that there was black supremacy, let's say that black people were running the United States and had brought in free labor from Europe on an internship, as Brother Amin often calls it, and everything, and let's say that we brought them in, and it was important that we keep them in a state of manageability, for lack of a better word.
I like that.
So now we decided at some juncture that we'll go ahead and allow one of these Europeans to ascend and become the figurehead ruler of our black supremacist nation. Do you feel that it would be in our best interest to allow any European to take that position who is not 100% behind the maintenance of our supremacy in our country. Would that be a wise decision, Kimberly?
You know, to me, I think that, okay, we all want to say that maybe, Obama, no, probably not.
Okay. So why would they do, would you expect them to do that?
I don't expect them to do that. I believe that Obama is a puppet. I didn't ever say that he was, you know, in there for black people. I never said that.
Okay.
You know?
Yes,
we all know
may not
that
said
he
it.
Can't do it. We all know that he can't do that anyway. His head would have been cut off a long time ago. He would have been popped a long time ago.
The reason why he can't do it, and you were saying earlier that you didn't understand why the gentlemen that were the men that were speaking felt the way that they did. And but now you're saying that you understand. You do understand.
I mean, to a certain extent, I do.
Okay.
I mean, if you want to go back saying that, okay, well, you know, they brought black people over here for free labor. We still, you know, we're still basically working on plantations. We still slaves. We mentally and, you know, physically kind of. You know, I mean, if you want to look at it in those terms, yeah. But, like, do we still keep, like, either we going to change it or we going to keep living it? Like, I don't understand.
That's the point.
Like, you know, it's white supremacy when he just said we are a majority here. Like, I mean, come on, look at over in those other countries, like, you know, that overthrew, you know, their prime minister who was serving them for over 30-something years. Like, it makes no sense why black people, African-American, who is a majority in the United States of America and almost, you know, in the world, basically, like, why can't, you know, we just, you know... I mean, I'm sure it's not in our destiny for that to happen again, ever, because maybe we messed that up back when, you know, we were cast out of the land of milk and honey or whatever. You know, I don't know.
Well, yes, I got an interesting thing. Are you new to the program?
Have you listened to Black Talk Radio before?
No, I'm talking about this program. This program. Have you listened to it
before? Oh yes, I'm new. I'm just, you know, looking around on the computer, and I decided to go on the podcast tonight.
Okay, because we have reason why I asked. We did some episodes from the ISIS papers by Francis Chris Wilson, and we discussed some of that. And they're back there. They're on the blog talk. You can look on the show page. We discussed that, but I want to bring into focus that you asked. It doesn't make any sense that we are a numerical majority and we're still getting pushed around where we are. And numerical majorities, well, since I can tell you like study the Bible somewhat, at least from what I can tell in discussion. If you go to Exodus chapter 2, you're going to notice that the new Pharaoh, which is the Assyrian dynasty at that period, had decided, said, hey, the Hebrews are too numerous for us to rule over. We're going to have to devise a plan, combine our mental strength and become wise, and then we can rule over them. That's what was said by the new Pharaonic dynasty. That was the 19th dynasty. Okay? Mm-hmm. They came out with that plot. They said they was a numerical minority. But they said we're going to strengthen ourselves, join together, and we will be wise and rule over them. And it's the same hustle that the European, they said, hey, they got to look around. Well, they knew that they was getting their ass. They were being ruled by black folks before. Once they realized they went all over the world looking for allies and found out they was the only people. And they said, okay, we're going to get these people. These people all walking around all free. We're going to take all they got. We're going to combine our strength. And what they did, they conquered Europe. All the Europeans wasn't even with that. The Greeks and the Romans hatched a plot to take over Europe, and they forced the Europeans to come and join forces with them. The Celts were fighting the Romans. They lost in 55 BC.
fighting them. Mm-hmm. We don't want white supremacy. They say, yes, you will take white supremacy,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to join, you're going to help us do this. The Celts had been to the Americas and came back.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They'd been here before before Columbus had. Read Barry Fell's book, I forgot, America B.C. Talked mm-hmm. about it extensively. But anyway, they said, hey, and they indoctrinated and re-educated the Europeans until they got them on board the white supremacy bandwagon, and they carried it out, and that's how they took over the rest of the planet. And they together. Basically what I'm saying is they got their act together, they're organized, and they're walking all over us because
mm-hmm.
they have their shit together, and we do not. We are not organized. We don't have a unified ideology to maintain our own survival in the presence of adversity. When we meet adversity from the European, we usually acquiesce, fall apart, and
mm-hmm.
we become their property. That's been going on since 332 B.C. That's when Egypt fell to the
mm-hmm.
Grecian, and ain't now province that white folks took over, we reconquered it. Everything they took, they kept from 332 B.C. till today. White folks been kicking our ass, taking names, and holding it down. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're right.
And it's about time for that to end. You see what I'm saying?
How do you suppose that it ends? Like, what can we do as people
I talked to you about that. And that's what we're talking about on the show. That's what we're talking
mm-hmm.
about right now. Is we're trying to address these issues in our behavior, in our thinking, how we relate to the great society, how the society how it affects us. How psychic racism, even when white folks ain't saying them to you, just a psychic pressure that you can feel it on your peripheral and central nervous systems, just going out into the world, trying to accomplish your daily task, you feeling it. And we're discussing it with these titles, these books that we survey. And we
right.
do this, you know, every week, discussing it, bringing it from your subconscious to your conscious mind, so we actually bring them so you can actually deal with it. And when you deal with it, and you confront these issues within yourself, and then you can start applying it to situations that you encounter in your living every day, thereby you can start to bring some resolution. You know, and we want to help you be encouraged to not be like the other people who know about it. Because it's not like we're the only people that know. Oh, they know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people that's complying and working with white supremacy. They understand completely because I've talked to them. They've told me. And they know what they're doing. They just don't.
Mm-hmm.
They're sociopaths. They don't care about you. They will use you and step all over you and have you going out there donating money and picketing for Obama so they can get some short-term political favor. Make a bunch of money. And you'll be sitting there going, well, we supported the black man. Now we didn't get anything. Nobody supports nobody to get nothing. Only black people do that.
Charles, his percentage went down, though, from black people. They're not voting for him.
They're going to have to figure out how to overcome that. Because, see, they didn't really market to black people to begin with.
That's right.
Marketed him to white folks because they figured they had all the black groups and whatever telling everybody to vote for him. And so all he had to do was sell himself to the European to get white folks to like him. And once white
mm-hmm.
folks would accept him, they knew the Negroes was going to fall right in line. Because they know black folks do only what white folks say, okay, that's good. Y'all like him? Yeah, it's a mouse. I'm so glad you like him, too.
You know what? I really think that black people, voted for Obama
mm-hmm.
in higher numbers because he was going to make history. He was going to be the first black president, and they wanted to have a part in that.
Yes,
and
it did.
Also, black people, our mind frame is to think that, wow, we got a black president, now he's going to do something for us. You know what
Some
I'm saying?
Some people thought that, yeah. I heard people.
You know, and I think that was a big thing.
Yeah. Yes, it did.
Know,
I heard people telling me that our problems were going to be over. Remember, y'all, when we was down in Houston? I recall. They were telling us, oh, everything's going to be better. I mean, it was like cult-like fever. I said, this shit is crazy. Then we all going to die. People thinking like this scared the hell out of me.
Yeah.
I was scared of the people. I know it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
They done checked their brains at the door. They forgot everything they ever learned. And you know what? That's what they were saying. Why the hell do you care? It's white supremacy. I don't care nothing about some black face on white supremacy. My relatives is getting shot dead in the street, and we fill them to jail. You talking about a black man walking around in a $1 billion suit? I don't give a goddamn about that. Boys just got through getting raped, and they talked about some preacher raping some guy, some dudes, and they like, we got a black president. Woo! Okay. It's really over now. Because if this is what a black president can do to the minds of black folks, makes us that crazy, we should never have another one.
But he's really administered more white supremacy than the white supremacy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should never have another one. Because that means, you know, well, we know it's white supremacy. He ain't about white supremacy. That's all I want to see. Come up there and dismantle all this shit. Say, fuck it. Imperialism is over.
When he swore in, if he didn't turn around to Bush and say you're under arrest, that was a wash.
Goddamn right.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Goddamn right. But I'm saying, with stuff that we know, you can't even get to be no kind of fish unless you go ahead and swear allegiance to all their secret oaths. You know what I'm saying? They got secret rituals for inaugurating, installing, investituring a official. Not the shit the stuff you see on television. That's for sure. They got the private ceremonies that they do before the one that you see on TV.
Right.
Mm-hmm. See, y'all don't know about that. That's all right. It's already chosen. You don't know when. You know, we don't know nothing about how this thing, when the dates of are set. But everything's planned, and we got to give. See what it is, black people, kids. We still trying to. We holding on. We saying we built this country, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
We laid out. Yeah, you built it because we made you build. That's what white folks say. You ain't asked to come over here and build our stuff for us. We did it because we told you to, and we let you get out of it. And now black people want some recognition. We want some appreciation for our servitude. We want to be rewarded and recognized for our complicity, for our allegiance.
Right.
That's what black folks want.
Mm-hmm.
And the black president is their prize.
That's right.
That's the reward. See, we're going to put a Negro up there. You see that? We're going to let him stand behind the evil great seal of the United States, and he's going to walk around, going to play that music, you know, and everybody going to feel so proud, and their tears, eyes going to well up with water. And then that's the end. End of the show. It's over. It's all Negroes.
And also, Charles, not to mention Jesse Jackson Jr., how they assassinated a black man's character to make him seem crazy and incompetent.
Yeah, Jesse Jackson Jr. He in it too. He did some other things they ain't like, and you know, yeah. Steve Coleman had to go off on Jesse Jackson Jr.
In the chat room, Kometu said they tested us with Clinton playing the horn on Arsenio.
Yeah, yes, you
heard
it. I remember that. I remember that back in the day. I was in college. Yeah, did that.
Yep.
Yeah,
they take to that pretty well. Let's put a black one in there, a real black one.
What did a real Negro would do? God damn!
A lot of people say he was the first black president.
Yeah, they were so happy to see him pander to the black audience.
And now we still haven't learned because didn't Obama go to somewhere in Harlem? And he sang a Marvin Gaye song or something?
Sure, yeah,
Al Green. Have you heard of Al Green? Al Green.
Yeah, he sure did. Al Green sure did.
Al Green.
He did that. Now, he was over in Germany. I forgot what he did. He went over there in Germany on some special date when a bunch of people got killed over some World War II and did some speech over there, you know, promoting white supremacy. I forgot that. I shouldn't even have brought it up since I can't remember. It just occurred to me that, see, what it is, he's speaking out of both sides of his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
But now, hell on, I gotta go. I'm gonna find that article. I'm gonna put it up on the page for the book club. I gotta find it. Somebody remind me to do that and get that article and put it up. So he over there, you know, he's standing around there telling me, oh, yeah, we're going to change this, and that's right. And then he go over there talking in German to my white power, you know what I'm saying? You know what it is, you know how we roll, you know, swastika, moving to the left,
not
moving to the right.
Not only they told them that this old Jeremiah, his preacher, his ex-preacher, and kissed that wall.
Yeah.
That's it.
Jeremiah, yeah, man, that stuff is wild, man. I can go on Obama all year long, but I'm not. Go to Afro Conversations on Facebook, and I do that over there, but I don't really talk too much. I just post stuff he's doing. But
we
I got time.
More years to talk about him.
I could, I'm telling you, man. These politicians ain't squat. They ain't worth a fart. They ain't worth toilet paper. Spent toilet paper.
Is this the bitter part of the show, right?
Yes, this is the bitter part of the show. I can't stand no politicians.
Okay. We always come to the bitter part of the show, Kim, right before it's time to go. That's when everyone. We have the bitter section.
Yeah, this is the angry hour.
This is the angry.
And Kim, you called just in time with the right question.
Hello.
Ooh, I like
that. I'm not mad because I'm angry sometimes too. You know, I'm angry at how, you know, I look around and I just see that we, you know, as people and just of my research and a lot of reading that I do, and I just can't understand why we just can't get it together myself. So I'm angry too. I'm at the point where I can get bashing on some things too. You know, and you know, I definitely feel where y'all coming from, cause I can get mad too.
You know what I'm saying? That's good. You keeping it real. That's right, cause you're supposed to get mad.
Yeah.
If you ain't getting mad, I'm very
angry at black people sometimes.
Yeah, you be angry at angry.
That at. That's saying that I don't love my people. I do love my people.
Yeah,
you
got to be angry in love.
We just do crazy things, you know, and then we complain
right.
about it.
You know what may help you? Go to the American Association of Mental Retardation. Go to their website and look up the definition of mental retardation, and then look around at the black people around you. And there's your answer.
American Association of Retardation.
Retardation.
There you go. Now, at the end of this book, if you stick with us or come back at the appropriate time, Dr. Amos Wilson has in the appendix of this book a list of mental disorders characteristic of black people. And and Brother Mean, another book club member, he just spoke to you, just told you that, he dropped that science on you. That let you know that those diagnoses that Dr. Wilson would give at the end of this book are the same, are some of the same symptoms of mental retardation.
Right.
So they basically what we're saying, Dr. Wilson attested to this in her book, The ISIS Papers, is that the Europeans have basically retarded the development of African people to get us into the position that we are in, which arouses your question and saying, how can we get to be like this? Because they retarded us.
I mean, in all fairness, in the words of Obama, I think Nana was familiar with this, we should just take off our house slippers. Didn't Obama say that?
He said something.
Yes.
Take off your house slippers.
Yes.
Put your boots on and strap them up and then pull yourself up by them. Because... you lazy. Good for nothing. Black people need to get to the voter booth. Vote for me.
Now, think about this right here. That's interesting. If I stepped up my boots, you think I'm going to go to the voting booth after I did all that? I'm coming looking for somebody that need to be found.
You have a caller.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, if anything, he could have said, pick up a book and read Brainwash.
Yeah, read.
That's a good book to read.
Yeah, by
read
Morrell or Tom Morrell.
Everybody
yeah.
can read it.
His book or Clarence Thomas's or somebody. You have a caller.
Yeah, you can read any book, yeah. But you write that.
You're live, calling 314.
You mind if I say a word or two on here?
Sure, go ahead, brother, what it is.
I just wanted to put my rag on before I talk.
Look him. Look, this is Right Reverend, man.
All right, we know who it is. What's up?
I'm just listening to what y'all are talking about, man. Y'all sound like you're having a party and got this. I'm taking these last few minutes, but I wanted to say something with the sister had mentioned about what we should do. You
okay.
know, and I always find that interesting when someone says that, because I understand where they're coming from, because we all want the so-called black family to come up, but really, that's an old concept now. You know what I mean? The revolution is the individual now, is you. It's like we, it's not so much we the people as it is I am one of the people who has to do something. You know, the old be the change you do not
see.
You want
to see, right.
You know what I mean? So if you don't see the change, if you don't see the things out there that you would like to see, waiting around for 10 motherfuckers to get together is going to be a long wait. But if
you
right away by yourself and just start doing it, you know what I mean? And if it's a good thing, that vibe will pick up. You know, we've had about four ages in this world, or five ages according to the Hopis, which is we had the age of Taurus, we had, which was I am born, right? That's when you had a God telling you what to do, a mean parent, which is what we see in the Old Testament. Then you had the age of Aries, which was the ram, which was the sacrifice, which was still kept was in the Old Testament. That's why you see a lot of motherfuckers being taken up to the mountains and whatnot and killed off, and children being sacrificed and what have you. Then you had the age of I believe, which was when we had the Savior, Jesus came through. So this is where the Savior came through and led the people and told them this is what you can do to save yourself, and this is great. Then we moved into the age of I know, which was Aquarius, where after we had the Savior came and told us what we need to do, now since we know what we need to do, we had this individual, the rugged individualist. Now we're in the last, the fifth or so dispensation, which is the age of Capricorn. You know, a lot of people say we're in the age of Aquarius, but we're actually in the age of Capricorn, which is now the I that was one of the people is doing these things that are going to actually bring the people together. So, in other words, we can do things separately, right? It's almost the age of paradox, I call it. You do things separately, but actually when the things that you're doing separately is going to pull people together as a whole, you see? So... when we see what we see going on in the world today, and we pray and we moan about when are we the people are going to get together, you are one of those people, and all you got to do is do it.
Right, right. I mean, that's what we do with all our projects. You know, we be in the change we want to see, and hopefully we attract people who may become like minded and who are like, you know, we all got our respective movements, but yet we all overlap and we all cross link. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, we never know who we may be inspiring to do or make some kind of new change in the future, you know.
There you go.
And that's why we all putting it down. You know what I'm saying?
That's all I
want
to say.
That's right. And that's good. The sister came on in. She made the call, and she was like, hey, you know, what's up? I've been supporting Obama about this and that. People saying he brings socialism. What's the deal? You know, and she got some questions answered. What's up with socialism? I'm telling you, y'all socialists. Y'all come, it doesn't even matter. Democracy, what that is. All these ain't no but different techniques at ruling over people. Oligarchy, you know, monarchy, you know what I'm saying, autocracy. All these ain't no but various techniques. And really, ancient societies was a major of one of them, you know. I mean, of all of them. And not just one form in itself, and even today they use these different forms to varying degrees to manipulate people into. I mean, people have to be, society has to be organized if you're going to have one. But the point is, the society under which we live in ain't for our advantage. Like I was telling people, just participate to your benefit as a group. And the problem with black people is we don't function to the benefit of a group. What it is, we got different sects with the black bourgeoisie. They work together as a group to benefit themselves because they are the buffer class between white society and the black underclass. So people see a black face with a black suit, with a black Ivy League education from Fisk, Howard, you know, all these network of schools like that. And they say, oh, man, that guy's going to do something for us. This guy's smooth talk. He educated. You know what I'm saying? He know this and on that. He ain't finna do nothing for you because he don't identify with your situation. His family go back. His black family probably own African, own slave. You see what I'm saying?
Well,
they did. Oh, they did. Yeah. Yeah,
they did.
Louisiana had the most slave-owning black people in this union, Confederacy. All union, it doesn't even matter. They own more here. Biggest slave votes here, too. Don't talk about that, though. But, you know what I'm saying? They,
you know, your society, man, today is really not set up for black people to be talking about a group revolution. You know what I mean? It's just the way it's just the way the logistics are. Now, when we was in the 60s, that if we was going to revolt and do all that shit, that was the time it was going to go down.
Right.
Now that they have basically came in and gave motherfuckers candy and whatnot, and we happy and got sandwiches, and we
government jobs, government jobs, government jobs.
You know what I'm saying? So we
and
retaliated
they
now. Stomachs are full.
Yeah. Right.
So we're not getting ready to do that thing right there.
Right. To a large capacity. But they emptying our stomachs a little bit because I'm seeing grown men ride around on mini bikes now. So we're starting to go back a little bit.
Riding around on mini bikes.
Yeah, I've seen, right, people, you know what I'm saying, maybe less affluence, less people being able to,
they just,
you know,
getting some exercise. They ain't doing shit.
Yeah, you know.
But see, they co-opted the fervor when they snatched a woman and put her on that women's lib bull.
Yeah, right. We got to get our mind back. And that's why.
We still fighting that battle today.
That
never went away. These women are still trying to dichotomize the male movement and the female, and is it patriarchy, is it matriarchy, is it this, is it that? You know, I'm a goddess, but you not. I don't need you.
Serve me, worship mine, all that.
That's still, to me, that's still leftover.
Right.
That's
still,
just
right,
white folks sneezing and you know, black people getting the cold. That's all.
Right.
They got the system. We just running around in it.
Right. We running around in it. So we have to have a cultural revolution. I'm not talking about no running in the streets, none of that. I'm saying us coming together, reasoning with one another, respecting one another, loving each other. Just, I mean, that's a big revolution for black folks. To love and respect each other, work together, don't want to move away to the community, want to live amongst each other. If we can just, because we can't do none of those stuff, we can't accomplish these things here. These are a big task for us right now. Learning how to share economy, and then being able to respect and love ourselves enough to want to educate our own children and not allow others to do it, and or let them tell us what we should and should not teach our children. See,
yeah,
we got
about
to have
in the 60s though.
Yeah, I mean they were talking in the 60s, but we lost it. We got to get all that back. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And forget the brandishing the guns. We did that in the 60s too. That was a bad idea, but we did it anyway because we didn't know any better. All that showing off, you know, walking around, that's right, I see what I got right here. Let them find out, discover that by accident. Walk on over here and they can feel that, them shells.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
They'll find out.
Yep.
They'll find out. You ain't got to see nothing, but you're going to feel it, though.
Oh, you mean like that show, You Better Not Can Tell You That?
Yeah, so You Better Not Can Tell You.
Mm-hmm.
Come on over, find out about this him. That's what all the black folks need to be doing. And we need to be creating new technology that they don't know nothing about. That means when we make an invention, don't go run and tell a mouse and try to get you a patent. You know what I'm saying? And we can have a whole cultural technological framework that they don't even understand.
But we give it up.
We give it up, right.
They did in Africa.
Right, we give it up. Hey, NASA, what you going to give me for it? Why you get showing it to him?
But
a meteor or something?
Here's my quick question. You know, why do we always speak into? And I'm just saying it, right? I'm going to be in a karate to my own damn question, but let me go ahead and say it anyway. Why do we always speak in terms of we? That's, to me, that's the ideal. That's the thing that slow motherfuckers up, because we keep waiting on we.
But see, there
we,
is
we,
no
we.
We
keep setting up the ideal of we.
But there is no we if we don't start with the I, like you're
right.
And, however, the we, it's just like when, if I'm talking about you, but then I say you, meaning the broader sense, or in general, you. I think that's the same concept as we. See, there is no we. I can't, when and
Steven, let me know, I got it for you. She's trying to say the second person.
Oh, wait a minute.
No, I'm
plural.
I say we.
Pronoun, we, you.
No,
y'all
I'm saying I could just be talking about me and you.
Well, yeah, I know what he. What I think what he's trying to address is, you know, like we try to talk about generalities and collectives and don't deal with the individual. But what I am saying that what the individual does has an effect on the collective. So I can still say we and talk about me at the same time because I am everybody and everybody's me. See, I mean we're not going to share that. You know, that's what we think. We look at the holographic nature of everybody. I am a peculiar expression or manifestation of the African experience in America. I am just a peculiar expression of that. And you are another.
Why don't you just go on and do it if you are the we, and then the we is doing it.
I'm doing it right now.
You heard?
I'm doing it now. It's happening.
That's what I'm talking about.
Every day I do what I do, we are doing it.
That's what I said, Angel. Don't be trying to take words out of my mouth.
I don't think I heard you say that.
Quit my shit up. Hey, no, look. Well, check it out, man. I agree with you 100%. I'm just fucking around. But, you know, that's what I was saying at the top of the hour, though, is that
right.
when the individual starts to get his thing together, then all of this shit would start to fall in place. But it's not enough.
Yeah.
It's not enough individuals who have waken up in the past. I will say the individuals are starting to wake up now, though. And that's how come,
yeah,
I think we're seeing the foment that we're starting to see.
Yeah, we talked about that. We call that the critical mass. That's what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You're
right.
Talking about the critical mass of individuals that are necessary to make a greater impact on the larger society. Right. We don't know, because we don't have that statisticians and whatnot, and our own sociologists and psychologists that really work to collect information for black people, but over long periods of time, to know what's the number. What's the number of highly active, highly motivated, creative black people necessary to move the collective from one state of mind to another? We don't know that number. So we basically just doing things, and we have no means of determining if we have reached it or surpassed it or how far we fall short. We don't know. So we just keep doing. You know,
mm-hmm.
We just keep out there doing. So you're talking like, yeah, we don't have enough. We realize that, but we have no means of tracking that right now. We don't. We are very, very disadvantaged state. But like the European, they got all kind of think tanks, university departments devoted to doing numerous types of research, and they keep track of everything. And they know what their number. They probably know what our critical mass number is, but they ain't gonna tell me what it is or how close I'm getting to it.
According to them, it can't get above 20%. Remember,
20%, okay.
I don't know if you remember this, and maybe you do, Charles. Because remember, in the Caribbean, they was having a lot more of so-called slave revolts.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that, in hindsight, is that white boy had figured out that any time the population of the slaves got over 20% or more, that was enough for them to have a slave revolt. So they determined that the best way to stop that is to always keep the number of the black population at 1-2%, or under 12%.
20%. All right.
They keep it at 1-2% is their critical mass. They don't let the number of black people who can swell up in a corporation get above that 1-2%.
Hold on, just 1 minute. We're about to go into overtime. So if for those in the chat room and listening on the browser, if you want to hear the remainder of the show, you have to call in at 323-580-5707. Otherwise, you can catch the last part of the show in the archive. Again, the number is 323-580-5707. Peace.
Right. Peace. Continue, bro.
No, that was it. I just wanted.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's why I was trying to tell us. that we 12% of the population.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's the magic number.
Yeah, to
right.
make us think that we are so few and that we could not
possibly overwhelm them. But now they have their technocracy in place.
Right.
And they have technologically surpassed us far because, you know, like we discussed earlier in various conversations off the record about how when we were technologically comparable, you know, when we first got off here, it wasn't a big gap in technological, you know, advancement between us and them. And they kept us under you know, close watch, you know, physical. And now that they've gotten more advanced and they have us more psychologically intimidated and terrorized, you know, they loosen the reins a little. But they keep all the other structures in place to let us know what had happened to us, how horrific our lives could be when we are not pleasing them.
You have a caller in 720.
720, what it is. Your own live.
Well, Hotep, I'm enjoying the show. Y'all covering some very heavy stuff, but you keep your laughter and your love alive, so I really appreciate that. And
Hotep
to Rack Rev, I always listen to his show as well. And I just wanted to add, the last time we kept statistics on ourselves was the journal that was called, I put it in the chat room, it was called the Negro Yearbook. And that was from like 1916 to the 40s. And we actually kept our own stats on everything we were doing. And since we stopped doing that, we lost all our power.
Mm-hmm.
All right then. I'm glad you dropped that. And somebody, yeah, that Negro Yearbook. I hope somebody get that back going.
I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah.
And that's actually free online. That's free online. You can download it from the archive. It's a website called.
Thanks for that contribution. See what I'm saying? This is what that networking is all about.
Right, right. So let me. I missed the gist of that. So he was saying in the Negro Yearbook, they talk about us keeping our own statistics.
The Negro Yearbook actually kept our statistics from 1916 up until the 40s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The archive is the show. Archive.org. I'm going to post it in AK Beyond the Book. And that's where you can find us to follow the show and keep up with our weekly broadcasts and the books that we're currently surveying. It's facebook.com/AK Beyond the Book.
And I also wanted to add another good book in the future would be Bala Baruti's book, Iwa, A Warrior's Character.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
That's all the questions, comments, suggestions, and whatnot. We can, call it a night.
Okay.
I'm going to keep listening.
All right. Thanks.
Don't participate in the census. That's all.
I know that.
Oh, right. Don't participate in nothing. Nothing if you can get out of it. That's right. And you should try hard to get out of everything that they try to obligate you to get into. All right. That's a wrap. We'll pick back up in the second half of the lecture series, lecture number two. And I think it's European Dogmatism. Well, I think that's the title of the second lecture. But anyway, we'll pick back there on page, I believe page 80. And we'll wrap up this second half. We'll enter lecture three probably in a couple weeks, where we'll blast on our way to the end of the book, and we can start on something else. All right. Y'all take care. Peace.
Peace. It's been real.
Let's do it again. Just like this.
Good night.